chapter. We will spend the majority of our time this evening in 1 Samuel 16 and 1 Samuel 17. Well, Michael was ready to preach for me tonight because, as many of you know, my life this week has been kind of like this. All of these wires intertwined, you get going, and so the week started off fairly well. Ready for class on Wednesday. I'm feeling good about what I'm going to preach on Sunday. Going to work on that Thursday. And then Thursday comes and Rachel has taken turn for the worse and go to the hospital. Now the rest is history, right? She's still in the hospital. All that good stuff. And it's even working in the hospital room. It's like you can't focus. It's like you're working on it. And Yvonne's nodding her head because Yvonne's had one of those weeks too. As many of you know. We announced on Wednesday night Yvonne's brother taking a turn for the worse. Well, Friday morning, he passed away. So, like one of those weeks where chaos is going on, and you're looking for moments of clarity. And so Michael yesterday, as he does on the Saturday before I preach on Sunday, he said, "What's your scripture?" And so I told him what the scripture was. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but he was like, "So, I can preach for you if you want." And I was like, "Yes. Great." Because it just didn't make sense of all this stuff that I prepared. I didn't have any clarity about it. I'm like, what in the world am I actually preaching about? If you're a preacher, you understand that. Sometimes you've got all this material, but you don't know how to say it succinctly and clearly to the point where it would do anything for you. And then this morning, it was almost like as soon as he's preaching, the light bulb went off and I had my moment of clarity and I said, "Ah, that's how I do it." So I went up to him afterwards and I said, "I think I'll go ahead and preach tonight because I have no idea what this week will hold, but I feel pretty good about what I've got, okay?" That being said, it's clear in my head, but it might be as clear as mud to you when this thing is over with. Because it's very possible that it's going to not go as clearly as I think it is in my head, but yet I hope that it will be for you. The event in which I want to talk about is David's promotion. And I might could put that in parentheses, promotions. Because we see him being promoted in various ways throughout 1 Samuel 16 and 1 Samuel 17. We see him being anointed as king over Israel in chapter 16. We see him in chapter 17 and chapter 18, really in chapter 18, as being promoted in Saul's army. And one of the things that I want to make sure that we understand is we were talking about this on Wednesday night, is how should a Christian go about being promoted? And we had a really good discussion about that. And that was what I wanted to talk about. But as I got to reading about it, and I got to studying it, the more the phrase that popped out to me in 1 Samuel chapter 16, if you will turn there, when Samuel is told to go to the house of Jesse to anoint his son as king over Israel, the first son that comes out is Eliab, the firstborn, who apparently looks the part. We know from chapter 17 he is a warrior. But he looks the part. But you'll notice in verse 7, the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature because I rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." And that phrase, I just couldn't let it go as I was studying the various aspects of that. And so I'm calling the first section what I found to be cool in this story. Like, things that kind of jumped out at me that you might walk away and say, "Wes, what does it have to do with anything?" Well, I'm not really sure what it has to do with anything, except for the way in which we look at things is completely different than the way God looks at things. But yet David, in this story, he looks at things much like God does. And so I'll point that out. And then finally, at the end of the lesson, the thing that should make the most sense are four promotable qualities that we see of David. We talked about various things on Wednesday night about how a Christian should be or could be promoted. And one of the things that we talked about is it's not like the world. It's not where you step on someone's back to get ahead. What we'll see are some of the reasons in which why David and I, when we walk out of here, we can say, okay, I can walk away with that. So we'll do that. Let's get to the cool stuff. God sees not as man sees. I want you to think about the introduction to the king. Samuel is right there. He's got all of the sons of Jesse, so he thinks, all seven of them. Biggest one walks by, not the one, right? Second one, not the one. Third one, not the one. Fourth one, not the one. Fifth one, not the one. Seventh one, not the one. Jesse, do you have any more sons? And there was one. That was the text that he congregated for. He's off tending the sheep of his father away. Then he gives us a physical description of it. But I want to contrast that for a second. I want you to go back to when Samuel really met the first king of Israel. Go back to chapter 9 of 1 Samuel 9. When Saul comes on the scene, it's interesting that Samuel doesn't meet him on day one. But yet, the introduction to Saul, so I want you to picture it as though you're seeing the king for the first time, because that is how the story is being told to us. Is that there's this guy, Saul, and here's the description of him. Notice verse 1. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Becheroth, the son of Aphiah, a Benjamite, a man of wealth. Well, the first verse is not about Saul. It is about his father. His father is some kind of mighty father. He either has wealth, and some translations say honorable, some say mighty, and I'm not really sure how you should take it, except for his father was of some great importance in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Now, and he had a son, verse 2, whose name was Saul, a handsome young man. And there was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than he. That's pretty good, right? That's what they say when they describe me, right? Nobody here more handsome. No, that is not the way in which I would be described. That is the way in which Saul was described. He's the best looking out there. And then from that, from his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. That's crazy. That is quite a physical character right there, right? But do you know what else it tells us about him? Verse 3, the following verse. Now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. So Kish sent Saul, his son, to find them. Take one of the young men with you. Now you say, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. Well, I want you to notice something. What had this man of wealth done? He somehow had lost his donkeys. And he sends his son, Saul, the best looking, the tallest one, to go out and get them. And was he able to find them on his own? No, they had to go find the seer, the man of God. And lo and behold, who was the man of God? It was Samuel. And you can see that down towards the end of the text. I just want you to hold that in the back of your head, that he's looking for animals, his father's animals, when Saul comes on the scene. We know what happens with Saul, right? Saul does not stay obedient to God. So in chapter 15, he is rejected by God. I'm going to take this away from you. That's why in chapter 16, David must be, I'm going to use the word, promoted, right? He goes into this. So now turn to your text, back to 1 Samuel 16, and let's notice our introductory of David. What is our first thing that we learn of David back in chapter 16 and verse 11? He's keeping his father's sheep. He is the youngest of 8 siblings. That's not the one that you would look at and you say, that's going to be the king. The youngest and the one who was stuck keeping the sheep. But yet, that is the one in which God had it. There's my contrast. I find that interesting. Saul can't find an animal. David, from his youth, has been guiding these and protecting his father's sheep. You might see a shadow of Jesus there, right? All of these different sheep entrusted to him. Now, I want you to think about it maybe from, I'm going cool here for a second. I want you to think about what it is like leading a group of people. When Ahab, king of Israel, is killed, the statement is made that the prophet sees all Israel scattered like sheep without a shepherd. It's interesting that sheep and animals in general, they have their own personalities. If you've got dogs, in our case you've got multiple dogs, you understand that they have different personalities. Ashley's shaking her head as she works at a shelter, a dog shelter. They all have different personalities. Same thing with sheep. You can't all talk to them the exact same way, and what you're really doing is managing personalities. You're really having to deal with that. Well, isn't that what a leader is, as opposed to someone with a donkey? They're just grabbing it by the, as long as they've got it under control, they can lead it wherever they want to go. It's a little interesting, a little different thing. And interestingly enough, right, isn't that the way God wants His shepherds in the New Testament to be? If they can't rule their own house, how can they rule the house of God? It's like if you can't take what's already been entrusted to you, how are you going to take on something so much grander than that? And the truth is, you can't. That is the litmus test, right? And so Saul, right off the bat, seems to be having some trouble with David. Not so much. But you'll notice that this description again when we get to verse 12 of David. He was ruddy. When was the last time you called somebody ruddy? I've never called anybody ruddy. I don't even know what it was, all right? So you have to look it up. What's it mean to be ruddy? It's talking about someone's complexion. They're very, well, it's almost like a red color. Meaning they're not white as a sheet. They're not pale. They look healthy. They look good. You walk in like, oh man, he's got a nice little tan going on there. And maybe is the idea. And then the follow-up is, he was beautiful eyes. He had bright eyes. And he was handsome. Again, their physical appearance strikes you. But yet, he was young. He wasn't the one in which Samuel nor the rest of the family would have said, this is going to be the king. Much like in the case of Joseph, right? That's what the kids were studying this morning. Joseph was right at the bottom. You would think that the oldest would be the ones who would rise to power. But no, no, no. It was the fourth, Judah. And it was Joseph, the 11th out of 12. Things aren't always as they appear, no? What's an application there? If you and I, we only base things off of what we see, we're going to be in a world of hurt. Because there is more to it than what the eye sees. What else do you have to go into all? Someone's motive, someone's heart. How do you know that? You don't, right? But what we can see is people's actions, which will tell us more about it than just their physical appearance. So here's an illustration. We think about promotions. We think about promotions being in the workplace. When is the first time usually, a potential employer sees their employee? They see them right in that interview, right? And what do you want to do? We almost always want to make a good impression. Why? It's what they're looking for something. And they might have seen something on paper about this character, but when you walk in, they're like, that doesn't quite match. His beard is all out of control and he's sloppy. That doesn't have a... But if you walk in and you look business-like, you look professional, you look all these things, guess what? That's going to go in your favor type of thing. All I'm saying in this sense is we all make first impressions on people. What do people see the first time they meet me? That is going to stick in their head. Something, honestly, physically is going to stand out. Or maybe it's like someone that doesn't have any real physical description whatsoever. They just kind of blend in because they have no personality. Nothing stands out about their appearance. Nothing stands out about their personality, right? You know what happens with that person? Oftentimes, they're not promoted. They get lost in the shuffle. But you and I, we make appearances, first appearances. And guess what? We remember. But remember, there's more to people than that very first appearance. But it is important to get on. Now, here's where I want to turn to David. David seemed to see things like God, right? We know David being a man after God's own heart, whatever that phrase exactly means. But you get to chapter 17, we see how David sees the enemy, right? Goliath. We talk about David and Goliath, even people that do not know the Bible, they know the story of David and Goliath. And here's how they know the story. the underdog one. Well, yes. But that's not the point of the story. That the underdog one. I want you to think about it from the Israel standpoint. You got a valley. On one side of the valley, the Philistines are camped. They're ready for battle. On the other side of the valley, the Israelites are ready for battle, and they're all ready to go in their armor and everything. And out walks from the Philistine side a champion. I want you to read the text here. We know this. But again, your very first time seeing this individual. We know that Israel was terrified and did nothing. We know that the one who was head and shoulders above the rest of Israel, Saul, did nothing. And here is the description of this champion. Verse 4. There came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs, and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. And the shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and his shield bearer went out before him. Well, you've got this champion. I want you to notice, we might not pay attention to some of these things. But there's some argument about how tall he actually was. Most of our translations say he was 6 cubits and a span. A cubit is about 18 inches. A span is about 6 inches. So, if you go by 6 cubits and a span, that's 9 foot 6 inches. That is basically the height of a basketball hoop. So let's play that game for a second. You see somebody 9 foot 6, what is your physical reaction? Hello up there. That's ridiculous, right? That is tall. The older texts, like the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Septuagint that have been found later, have something like 4 span and 6 inches, which would put him at 6 foot 6 inches. Okay, not as intimidating, but if Marvin stands up, Marvin's what, 6 foot 5? 6 foot 6? 6'3". 3 inches taller than Marvin. Imagine you're a little guy. Heaven, I hate to pick on you. But imagine you're a youth, right? You're young. We're talking about that. Going against Marvin. You know what we're doing? We're laughing at him. Or nothing. What do you think? It's a Marvin. What do you think you're going to do? You understand that, right? At worst case scenario, or at best case scenario, that's as close as they are together in battle. Well, maybe more than likely, it is the biggest guy you can think of versus an absolute giant. Let's go with that for a second, just based off his armor. Here's what we don't think about. He's wearing a helmet of bronze. Doesn't tell us how much, but many people estimate that his helmet weighed some 30 pounds. So imagine putting a 30-pound weight on top of your head. What is your neck going to do? At least mine is, right? Going down. 30. He's got his coat of mail on there, which is kind of like, it's actually a pretty good description here of what he's got. It's covering his whole chest. It's like a coat. And it weighs 5,000 shekels. So that's approximately 150 pounds. So imagine carrying a 150-pound person on you. Like, we have people working out with 30-pound weight vest on, and they think that's a lot. 150 pounds. And you go through these other things. He's got his armor on his leg. So you got shin guards that are made out of bronze. Again, incredibly heavy. But he's got to be able to lift up his legs and run as a warrior. And if he's 9 foot 6, we're talking about like a 3.5 to 4 foot shin guard of bronze. So whatever that weight is. Then you've got his javelin that is between his shoulders. And then he's got a spear that's a weaver's beam, so it's probably about yay long. And then the head on that thing is of iron, weighing 600 shekels of iron, which again comes out to another 30-pounder. So imagine, again, you got a 30-plus-pound weight in your hand that you can throw. we see that, what are we doing? We're not David, are we? If we're honest with ourselves, we are like the rest of Israel. Somebody else go deal with that. We're not going. And he had an armor bearer carrying a shield. I don't know if it's because the shield was too big or if he never even needed a shield. I don't know. David didn't see it that way, did he? David comes on the scene, and David's like, what do we get for killing this guy? And they all kind of laugh at it. Right? And then they tell him what it is. Now, what do we get again if we kill this guy? And they laugh at him again pretty much. Wow. We can do it. How dare he? How dare he defy the armies of the living God? Who is this guy? Do what? He's not looking at it like everybody else. He's looking at it like God. And he says that to Goliath himself. When he finally gets approval from Saul, which I don't understand why he needed approval from Saul. But when he got approval from Saul, Saul's like, the Lord be with you. You go on, Jehovah be with you. If you said Jehovah's giving you the strength against the bear and the lion, you go right ahead. And then it's almost like Goliath is offended. Goliath is offended. They sent out somebody so young and so not so warrior-like against him. But you'll notice now, down with me in chapter 17, in verse 43, again, I just want to take what Goliath says. He said, am I a dog? Are you coming to me with sticks? You think I'm a little dog? And you just beat me into submission? What do you think you are? Who do you think I am? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said, David, come to me. I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. This is trash talk for those of you that enjoy trash talk. This is real. I'm going to give your flesh to the birds. David said, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin. I got to tell you, if someone is coming to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, do you know what I am doing? I am running away. Not David. But I come to you in the name of Jehovah of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you defy. This day Jehovah will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God of Israel, and that all this assembly may know that Jehovah saves, not with the sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hand. It wasn't just for the Philistines that battle. His own brethren, including his three oldest brothers, did not see things the way that God sees them. They did. I'm going to ask you a question. When you're going to go against the enemy of the Lord, the one who has defied the Lord, Satan, do you see it as your battle against Satan? Or do we see it as David saw it? The battle is the Lord's. It is the Lord against Satan. If I'm willing to go fight, you know what the Lord is going to do? He's going to win that. But if I ain't willing to go and fight, there was one person that was. It was a guy who was going back and forth between King Saul and the sheep. Back to the sheep. He went. That's not what we would have expected. We wouldn't have expected a shepherd to go like that. But he didn't see it the same way you see it. He saw it the way God saw it. So now, let's get to our four little problems here. David, quite frankly, is very talented in a lot of ways, right? We got all the psalms that he wrote. Skill, right? I want you to notice in chapter 16, his first promotion, well, I guess his second promotion. His first promotion is that he's actually anointed as king over Israel. But his second promotion is that when he was anointed as king over Israel, the Spirit of the Lord left Saul. And the Lord sent an evil spirit Saul, a tormented one. And Saul's servant said, hey, when this thing comes over you, you should have someone play some music for you. That's great. And David is the one that has chosen to do that, right? I thought it was interesting in reading this that maybe they should have said, because they recognized that the spirit was from the Lord, maybe they should have said, hey, next time the tormenting spirit from the Lord comes over you, how about you try to get your life right with the Lord? But that was not the suggestion. The suggestion was, hey, go get your mind off of it by listening to some music. So guess who they called? They called David. Why? Look at verse 18 of chapter 16. So one of the young men answered, behold, I've seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite, who is skillful in playing, a man of valor, a man of war, prudent in speech, and a man of good presence. And Jehovah is with him. Man, that's another great description, isn't it? That's the reputation that David had garnered since being anointed king over Israel, even without people knowing. He was well-rounded, but specifically he was skillful. I want you to think about that in the realms of being promoted. And I thought to myself, there's other ways of being promoted than just at work. You might be promoted on a sports team. Or you might be promoted in church, in your service, in the way in which you can lead and serve here, right? People want more roles all the time, or maybe they don't. Well, quite frankly, and I think Stephen talked about this a couple weeks ago, some of these things require a lot of skill. You have to have some kind of ability in order to do certain things, right? We look at somebody who does a job very well. Maybe it's a professional athlete. Maybe it's a cook. Maybe it is someone who makes clothing. We look at their finished product and we say, man, that's not that hard. I can get up there and I can preach that sermon. Man, I can get out there and I can make that shot. I can get in there in that kitchen, I can make that meal. And then you try to make that meal, you try to make that shot, you realize, oh, it's a little more difficult than I thought. If we're going to be elevated, guess what we have to have? We got to have some kind of skill. Not every job requires the same amount of skill, right? But the more skilled that you are, the more likely you'll be to move up. So then the age-old question is, does someone's skill come as a gift from God, something that they are born with, or is it something that they have learned and have developed? And everyone looks at me like, I don't know. Because there isn't. There is some things we are clearly born with. There are other things that you can cultivate, that you can add to that, right? And there's been a lot of books written about that. One of the books I've been reading most recently is a book called Mindset. It's a book in which the way you look at things, there's a fixed mindset in which you think whatever you have right now, whatever your ability is what your ability is going to be, and you have a maximum potential. The other mindset is a transformative mindset. It is a mindset in which you think you can do more than what X, Y, Z. With effort, with work, with determination. So the question is, how does one become full of skill? If you play the drums, if you play the guitar, if you cook, how does one become full of skill in that? Practice. You might have a gift to begin with, but you don't become full of something until you do it over and over and over and over again. Spiritually speaking, wouldn't it do us well if we had gifts, things that we have abilities to do, that we do them over and over and over and over again? And you know what people start to notice? Man, we are skillful in X, Y, Z. Guess what people take notice of? When I need that done, I can call Brother So-and-so. I can call Sister So-and-so. So you might ask yourself the question, what is my skill? What do I have that I can offer? Because as we know from that parable in Matthew 25, we all have something we could offer to the Lord. Am I even practicing on that one thing? Or am I just kind of just holding on to that? A person that wants to move up and be promoted, and even promoted in God's eyes, right? Grow in favor with Him. person that has that skill that continues to increase that. I want you to notice the second quality of David. We see this in chapter 16. In verse 20, right, we see that he is, back up in verse 11, he's keeping his father's sheep. Is that a job that you just send anybody to do? It could be livelihood, meals. That's expensive. You lose a sheep, that's a big deal. Especially if you got four. That's a big deal. He was dependable, is what I want you to see. I want you to notice how that goes on. Look down to verse 20. That when David is sent for by Saul to be his little music guy, verse 20, Jesse took a donkey laden with bread and a skin of wine and a young goat and sent them by his son David to Saul. You say, what does that have to do with dependable? Well, what happened when they needed to take the gift to the commander in chapter 17 and the food to his brothers? Who was sent? Chapter 17 and verse 28. Who was sent there? Old David. Now Eliab's anger was kindled. Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you've come down to see the battle. He says, what have you done with those sheep? Weren't you out watching the sheep? You know what our text tells us he did? Go back to verse 20. David rose early in the morning, and he left the sheep alone. He left the sheep with the keeper, and he took the provisions and went as Jesse had commanded him, and he came to the encampment. He did just as his father told him to do. He made sure that his job was taken care of, even if he wasn't going to be there. You know what we call that? That's somebody who's dependable. If you ask them to do a job, guess what? They're going to get the job done. And if they're not going to be there to get the job done, you know what they do? They get somebody else to do the job. So I don't know if I've ever told this story publicly, but I'll tell this story publicly. Someone came to me and they wanted to teach a Bible class. I said, great. Love for you to teach Bible class. So teach with me this quarter. You teach some classes, I'll teach some of the classes, and we'll do this thing together. Well, it was a Sunday morning, and it was the individual's time to teach a class. And the individual did not show up to teach a class. The individual didn't text me to tell me that they weren't going to be here. Didn't call. Didn't say I'm sorry. I thought, man, that's pretty low down. You know what I never asked that individual to do? Teach another class. You know what I did the rest of that quarter? Taught every class. So here's another story for you. This all happened here, by the way. I'll tell you another story. I'm having a men's training class about people teaching class. So you sign up. I'm going to teach this Friday night. Okay? Friday night comes. The person has signed up for this particular class to teach. Guess who doesn't show up? Guess who didn't tell anybody? You know what I don't do? I got nothing to do with that. That person is completely unreliable. If you can't call and get somebody else to do your job, guess what? You don't deserve to do the job. Because you're not doing the job. That's not David. And we've had this discussion in men's meetings recently. You could go down the list of things. You might say, okay, it's not a big deal if you're waiting on the table and there's nobody to take your spot. But what about if you're down for song leading? What if we didn't have two preachers, right? And we know Michael's not going to miss the Sunday, so just imagine Michael's not here, right? So, roll in Sunday morning, I'm not here. I didn't call anybody. I didn't text anybody telling them I'm sick. I got a virus or I'm in the hospital. And y'all show up and y'all all looking around like, wouldn't that be an issue? It'd be a big issue, right? That's somebody who's unreliable. Well, somebody who's dependable. Somebody that you know they're going to get the job done. They get more opportunities. They get more. But David was also fearless. And I want to make sure that I say fearless and not careless. You might say that he's a young guy and he's just willing to take on anything. But in his response, as we already read in chapter 17, he is fearless, even though it says 16, it should be chapter 17 there. He's fearless because he knows it's not about him and his strength. He's willing to go up against anything because he has the Lord with him. And he's had that proven in his life. He brings up the instance where he's out protecting his father's sheep. And the lion comes up. The Lord delivered him. The bear comes up. The Lord delivered him into my hand. So a lion is probably stronger than Goliath. A bear is probably stronger than Goliath. Who is this guy? The Lord has already given him bigger victories. So he's got nothing to be afraid of. But yeah, you and I, we get something else thrown our way, I'm now terrified of that. But you think about people that are willing to go out there. They're not afraid. I hate to use this phrase, but they're not afraid to put their name or their reputation on the line. They've got nothing to protect. They're not trying to protect themselves. They see something that needs to be done. It doesn't matter how scary or how difficult that is. They're going to go out and they're going to do that. That individual is fearless. They're not careless. They're fearless. Because they know that the job needs to be done. And if the job needs to be done, the Lord is going to provide a way for that job to be done. That's a different mindset, isn't it? While some of us sit back and we want somebody else to do it, David was not that way. And finally, and this might not even be a quality, this might just be a byproduct of all these others, but yet, there are just some people in life who are successful. You would see that with David. You would see that in chapter 17 and verse 50, that the Lord delivered Goliath into his hand. But then you'll notice in chapter 18, that after this day, Saul says, David, you're not going back and forth between your father's sheep and my place. You're staying with me. And he stayed with him. And yeah, it was when he became great friends with Jonathan, as Everton talked about this morning at the table. And so notice verse 4. So Jonathan stripped himself of his robe and that was on him, and he gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. The king's son is giving up all of his armor for David, because what did David not have in the previous chapter? Armor. And he just has the Lord. So verse 5. And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him. So that Saul set him over the men of war, and this was good in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. He went out, he did his job, and guess what the Lord gave him? Success. And guess who recognized it? The king, the leaders, and all the people, they recognized him. To the point where we have the division between him and Saul. Where the women now sing, Saul has slain his thousands, but David his 10,000. I wonder what it was like to live in the days of those two characters. Being around both David and Saul and seeing their stark differences. Of how you see one who you would think should do, but it's not. And the other, when he starts out, he's just a wee little guy. But by the time it's all said and done, he is a man of war. To the point, he's shed so much blood that even the one who says he's after his heart, he's like his heart, right? He's killed too many people. He can't build the house of God. That is quite a progression. That is quite a promotion. To the point where your son shall sit on the throne forever. That's different. That's not everybody. David has very good qualities. You can see that. That's just the intro thing. That's not even all of the other things. As David matures, we might say he was actually even a little bit better as he was young. But doesn't sometimes it have to get to our heads a little bit? That's the danger. That's the side effect. So maybe we can work these four qualities in here in the congregation, here in church. And guess what? training our prayers to be what God wants is what we want. We train our eyes to see things the way God sees them. What a difference our lives make. Clear as mud or clear as water? I don't know, but maybe you got a little something for it. Maybe this evening you're ready to submit your life to Christ. You're ready to be baptized into Jesus for the forgiveness of your sins. Or maybe you need the prayer of your congregation here. Why don't you come now, have a stand, and have a seat.